If you ask the best in the world the single greatest secret to success, they'll smile and give a gentle laugh. You're asking the wrong question. Being extraordinary is not a single element. It cannot be distilled down to one thing. We're told that being a success is a magical thing that happens in a place you'll arrive. The hard part is that this long-held truth is the biggest lie. Extraordinary features humans that have reached the top of their field and become extraordinary humans. The door to being extraordinary is now open. Will you walk in? So welcome to the Create Your Own Life Show, Don Felder.
Hey, how you guys doing there?
Hey, thank you so much for hanging out with me today, Don. I just love your level of accomplishment is incredible. And we talk to people that are world class at what they do. And man, that's definitely something that you fall under.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I just do what I do. I fell in love with music when I was 10 years old. And that's why I do it. I love writing. I love recording. I love touring. I love playing live. I just love everything about it. And so I've just become obsessed with it as a child. And I don't know what I'd do with myself without it, to tell you the truth.
Well, I read somewhere actually that interest for music and for you was actually piqued by seeing Elvis on the Ed Sullivan Show. Is that true? And what was that like for you?
Well, I think my family was the last family in Alachua County in North Central Florida actually to get a TV in our home. And it was about the size of a small half-height refrigerator with a tiny little 12-inch screen in it.
Oh, gosh.
And it was black and white. But I was happy to have something that much of modern technology actually in my house instead of just a radio. And so we would watch it. There were only three channels, the three network channels, NBC, ABC, and CBS. And I remember seeing the Ed Sullivan Show one night when Elvis Presley was on it, and all these amazing rock and roll shows that were on there, and Elvis was like dancing around and shaking his hips, and his greasy hair was flipping around, and his lip was snarled, and all these girls were screaming at him. And I went, I think I'd like to do that. That looks like a lot of fun. So I started listening to the radio all the time, because there was no internet, there was no iPhone, there was no iPad. It was just, you know, radio. And so I listened to the radio obsessively and just fell in love with it, and finally got a guitar from a kid across the street. I traded him a handful of cherry bombs for this kind of semi-cracked guitar, acoustic guitar he had in his closet. I was off and running and haven't stopped playing since, to tell you the truth.
What was that, I guess, journey for you like then from that kid that discovered that guitar to really like making it in music? Like what was that like for you?
Well, I have to clarify what making it in music is.
Sure.
To me, it was never about the fame. It was never about fortune. It was never about trying to be on TV. It was never about any of those accomplishments. It was just about the love of playing music. And I spent hours and hours and hours on my front porch on this metal glider, trying to figure out how to play that guitar. We didn't have enough money for lessons. We didn't have a music store in town with anybody that could teach. I became, I think at 14 or 15, the first guitar teacher in Gainesville. And I
Wow.
couldn't even read music, but I was pretty much self-taught. And so it was never about making it in music. And I think there's a false illusion that exists with people that want to go into a career in quote unquote show business, whether it's music or acting or television or whatever it is, that they're going to go be discovered and overnight it's going to turn into this wonderful, fabulous career. Now, that does happen with the advent of the internet here, where you can become a internet star pretty much overnight. But the problem is, as fast as things go up, they can go down just that quick. So I was never about that. It was all about the love of what I was doing, the love of playing, love of music. And that's really what's propelled me, the energy and desire that's propelled me through all the days and years of my career. And so I am still out on the road right now playing tonight in Chicago.
I love that. Well, I guess for you then, though, you mentioned you were self-taught. Like, what was the biggest things that you were focusing on to really perfect your craft?
Like I said, I had to learn by ear, and I forced myself, but with a great amount of desire and passion to learn how to do this, be able to listen to something, two or three or four times and play it. We had like dad had bought a tape recorder and he would borrow people's records and record it on tape so I could rewind and play it back and rewind and play it back and rewind and play it back.
Oh my gosh.
I probably wore that tape recorder out. Like most kids today can go on YouTube. As a matter of fact, I got a call from the head of Gibson Guitars a couple of weeks ago and they were doing a NAMM show, National Association of Music Manufacturers down in Dallas. He calls me up and he says, you're not going to believe this. There's an 8-year-old kid here that's playing the solo on the end of Hotel California. Unbelievable. So I said, 8 years old? I haven't even picked up a guitar by the time I was 8, much less. So I got the kid on the phone. I said, you put this kid on the phone. I need to talk to him. How did you learn to do that? And he had gone on YouTube and watched me play it over and over and over, exactly like I had learned to do it, but with a tape recorder. It's that lust and desire and passion to learn how to do something that so many people, including Malcolm Gladwell, says, you don't need to send your kids to, you know, Harvard or Yale to get a good education. What they need is the fire of wanting to learn and the intrigue and excitement of learning how to do something, and that they'll learn whatever they want to learn. And so that's kind of the same thing exists today, but you just got to have that fire lit inside yourself to be able to pursue what you want to do.
I love that. And you mentioned that solo in Hotel California. You know, that solo with you and Joe Walsh dueling guitars is like one of the most iconic, you know, in rock and roll. What was the creation of that particular track like for you?
You know, at the time when you're just sitting and tinkering around and coming up with ideas and writing demos, you have no idea what the effect's going to be, what the repercussions are going to be. You just do it. You just write and play and record. And I think I made a cassette of like, I don't know, 15 or 16 different song ideas. I was told by Bernie Ledden when I joined the Eagles, don't write lyrics. Don't write lyrics and melody. Just write music beds, basic tracks that Don Henley and Glenn Frey could write lyrics and vocals on top of. So that's what I did. I made these basic tracks. One of them became Hotel California, and one of them became Victim of Love for the Hotel California record. Did the same thing for the Long Run record. I think I wrote about 12 or 13 just song ideas for that. Put them on cassettes and gave them to everybody in the band. And, you know, if they found something they liked and had a good feel about it, they would write for it or with me on it. And it was, but you just never really know what the outcome is going to be from anything you've written. And I think the one moment in time where I really felt the Louisville Slugger at a full home run swing hit me right in the forehead was when I walked out on stage in New York City and played Hotel California for the United Nations. And there were about 500 heads of states in the audience, presidents, secretaries of state, all wearing these ear cups with their translator speaking in their ear. And everybody in the place started singing in English, Hotel California.
Wow.
And I really realized the kind of global impact of that one song all over the world. And it amazed me. We couldn't speak English. They didn't think they should be able to sing along with that. So
wow.
That was the moment of epiphany. That was about 5-6 years ago or something like that. So anyway, if you never was around tinkering in your studio, where things are going to go.
Yeah. Well, talking about studios, your third studio album, American Rock and Roll, was just released in April. And I've got to tell you, Don, some of the names that you've worked on this album, Sammy Hagar, Slash, Richie Sambora, Peter Frampton, Joe Satriani, you know, the list goes on and on. Like, how are you able to put collaborations like this together? And what's the experience as a creator collaborating with artists like that?
Well, you know, my previous album, not American Rock and Roll, but the one I did before that, which was called Road to Forever, I played every guitar part on the record. I played electric guitar, acoustic guitar, slide guitar, Nashville guitar, mandolin, gut string guitar, zither, everything you can think of. I take it back. I had one guy, Steve Lukather, come in, he's a great guitar player, and play on the title track with me, Road to Forever, as an homage to the producer that was going to record that record with me, Greg Ladani. I thought that record came out really well, but what it lacked was the fire and energy of spontaneous creativity. that you get when you get a couple of guys sitting in a studio with guitars and you have no idea what you're going to play or write, and you just plug in and say, okay, you take these 8 bars, I'll play something here. Like when I was doing this song called Rock You with Sammy Hagar and Bob Weir on it, and Joe Satriani. Now, Satriani comes in, and I've never played with Joe before. I'd heard him play, obviously, thousands of times, but I'd never actually sat in a room and played with him. And he starts playing, and I'm going, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. He's got this incredible, amazing, just intense technique that isn't my way of playing. But the contrast between the two styles was much like what happened with Walsh and I, that it's a really distinct personality that you see in each way that people plays. So Joe would play something and I had to step up and dig deep. I couldn't rely on old licks or stuff that I knew. I just had to jump in and improvise my way through making solos as well. And so that excitement, throwing yourself out into the pool and hoping you can swim, is really the fun part of doing this with all these different guitar players, different artists. I'd never sung a duet with somebody else on a record. So for Rock You, I wanted somebody that had that big kind of rock and roll intense voice, and kept thinking, who can I get to sing on this? Who is right for this? Oh my God, Sammy would be perfect for this. Now, Sammy and I have known each other since the 80s. We both wrote a song called Heavy Metal for the Heavy Metal soundtrack album and movie. Been on a TV show. We've done charity work together. We're just friends. So I called him up and flew up to his little studio and wound up having him sing a verse, and me singing a verse, and him singing a verse, and then Joe Satriani coming in and working out the guitar parts together in about an hour. And Bob Weir comes staggering down Sammy's hallway of the studio. He has a studio a couple of blocks away. And when it's boring and dark and cold over there, he comes over to get a free cup of coffee and hear some fresh jokes. So I said, Bob, you got to sing on this track. Come out here, and put him on a mic and let him sing Rock You along with about 20 other people on that track. So, you know, it just kind of fell together in a fun way, but it's exciting when you sit there and you're in control of everything, like I did on my previous record. You don't like that, you can redo it. It doesn't have that same just spontaneous improvisational energy that I was able to capture on this record, whether it's Slash coming in and playing, or Satriani, or having Alex Lifeson play on a track with me. Richie Sambora and Orianti played on a track. Just really great, fun, exciting times. And that's really what I was looking for. Fun, excitement, and a record. I basically called up a lot of my friends and had a rock and roll party in the studio with them.
That's awesome. I love that. And I guess whether it was on this album, Don, or at some other point in your career, what artists have you enjoyed collaborating with the most out of all the ones you've collaborated with?
You know, I've learned from literally the tape recordings that I made back in Gainesville when I was, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, early on, to including this record and all the other artists that I've worked with. I've learned something from every particular artist that I've worked with, whether it was working on a Bee Gees record where I had to learn how to do things that I'd never done before. Barry Gibb had me play, I think, 16 or 17 tracks of the exact guitar line in perfect unison. Couldn't be a little out of time. It couldn't be a little bit out of tune. One note, if a little bit too much pressure on the fret, it had to be perfect. And when you stack those up, it makes this big, fat guitar line that comes in the middle of the song. I've never done it. So I've learned something from everybody. As a matter of fact, Albie Gallatin making those records with Barbra Streisand and Barry Gibb and Albie Gallatin, their producer, is absolutely a musical genius. And he helped develop the software for the Synclavier synthesizer, which sat in my studio. And we did a lot of records together. And I just learned technical, musical, production techniques, arrangement techniques from everybody that I've worked with. And then you go play on a Bob Seger record, you walk in, there's no parts for you. You just get, okay, here's your 16-bar solo. Okay, set up an amp and a guitar and let me plug in. Let me hear it a couple of times. All right, let's go at it. You know, you just kind of do, and it's all different. It's all exciting, and you really have to be very spontaneously creative. And the one thing I learned starving on the streets in New York for a year and a half, when I lived there in 68, 69, was that I had always admired jazz musicians for their ability to walk out on stage and play just what's coming through them. And I remember seeing Miles Davis at the bottom of the Village Gate. I think it was probably 66, something like that. I drove from Gainesville up to New York City just to see Miles Davis. And in his band, his piano player was Herbie Hancock. Ron Carter was playing stand-up bass. He had a 17-year-old drummer, named Tony Williams, who was playing with Miles, who was unbelievable. And Wayne Shorter on sax. So I'm sitting in this club in New York City, and those guys go up and take the stage. Miles is sitting over by the side of the stage, and the band starts playing. And Herbie takes a piano solo. For about 2 minutes, just jamming, just playing on this chord progression. Now Wayne Shorter steps in and takes a sax solo. Then they start vamping again. Slowly, Miles gets up out of his chair, walks up the stairs on the side of the stage, walks out on the stage with his back to the audience in the middle of the stage. Everybody is waiting with bated breath for Miles to play. Mm-hmm. And he holds that moment there just for a second, and he plays three notes. Bands go, he plays, and it just takes your breath away. He doesn't come out playing 1,000 notes a second like Kenny G. He comes out and just really gently embraces you with this beautiful melody. And then he starts just playing. He's not playing something that he's written note for note. It's just rolling out of him at the moment. And that gift is something I wanted to develop. So I spent a lot of time in New York studying jazz, listening to jazz, playing jazz, studying jazz guitar players, listening to jazz horn players, to be able to develop that spontaneous ability to walk into a studio, walk onto a stage, and just play, you know? I remember I went over to Eddie Brigati's house, who was the lead singer, along with Felix Cavalieri, for the Young Rascals, or the Rascals. And he was dating this beautiful Juilliard Music School she was a harpist, and she was sitting there playing, and it was just beautifully angelic, but it was classical music. So I went over when she stopped, and I closed her book that she was reading from, and I said, "Wow, you have the most incredible technique on that instrument. Just play something for me." Well, she said, "Well, I've got a couple of pieces I've memorized that I've studied, you know, in my class." But no. Don't play what you studied. Just play. And yet she had developed this incredible technique on this instrument, but had never developed the ability to express herself. It's like some typist that sits there and types some other manuscript, but can't write a book. If you know what I mean, there's a big difference in the creative side of it, the technological side of it. And jazz musicians have developed both the unbelievable technical control over their instrument and the unbelievable creative ability to just let it flow through in that way. So that's what I admire most about the process, is trying to develop myself to the point where I could do exactly that.
Absolutely. Well, Don, before we let you go here, what is something that you believed at 21 that you don't believe now?
Wow. You know, I'm not certain I can remember what I believed at 21. You know, I will tell you that I believe that there were a lot of other things in life that could bring you great happiness. And most of those have turned out to not be true. You know, at some point you think, "Oh, if I only had $10,000, I would be happy." That's not true. oh my God, if I could only get married. And half the time, or more than half the time, marriages fail. And as much joy as they bring you in the beginning part of your life, that relationship, it's just as much tragedy and pain at the end of them. So that doesn't hold water. The one thing that I do believe is that when I finally got married and had kids, that I would love that relationship with my kids, which I do to this day, my kids and my grandkids. So there's very few things that I can remember now that I actually believed to be true at the time that have not changed in some way.
I love that. Well, the album is American Rock and Roll. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Create Your Own Life show, Don Felder.
Thank you, Jeremy. And I wish you luck with this project, buddy.